You're listening to Talking Travel with Roy Lowy and Friends, the number one source for travel news, reviews, and in-depth travel journalism, broadcasting live from Florida's Sun Coast on the Travel Talk Radio Network. Don't forget, you can listen to us online 24/7 at ttrn.com. And now, here's the travel guy, Roy Lowy. Hey!
Thank you, Mike, and this is Roy Lowy, and you're listening to Talking Travel on the Travel Talk Radio Network, TTRN.com, and on the World Travel and Dining Channel. We've got a great lineup of guests today, Evan Eggers, Neela Schwartzberg, Kay Harwell Fernandez, and Bob Fisher, when we come back.
This is the story of Bob and Elaine. The daily grind was driving them insane.
We need to get away. A change of a location. Not just a trip, but an exciting vacation.
You're right. Pack your bags. The ride's nice and short. We'll fly Sky Value from Gary Chicago Airport.
Fly Sky Value nonstop from Gary Chicago Airport to your favorite hotspots, Orlando, St. Pete Clearwater, Tampa, Mesa, Phoenix, and Las Vegas. Book your flight at flyskyvalue.com.
Gary Chicago Airport is quick as can be. The drive was easy.
The parking secure and free.
Flying Sky Value is the way to go.
For hassle-free flights that save lots of dough.
And they flew Sky Value from Gary Chicago Airport happily ever after. Fares are one-way subject to availability and change. Restrictions apply. Fares do not include September 11th security fees and other U.S. taxes and fees. See participant agreement for details. Sky Value flights operated by Extra Airways, PC number 06154.
The show is brought to you in part by SureCruise.com, your online cruise superstore, and in part by USA 3000 Airlines, serving seven different cities from Fort Lauderdale, Fort Myers, St. Pete, and Orlando. Mr. Evan Eggers, president of SureCruise.com, is on the phone. Thank you for joining us today, Evan.
Good morning, Roy.
Good morning to you. It's been a couple of weeks, and we need to do some catching up here.
Yeah, quite a bit going on the past couple of weeks, too.
But, you know, before we do, tell us about your new customer referral reward program.
Well, you know, we decided that we have, any good business that serves customers, right, wants to build their customer base by referrals, by customers saying, wow, we really like your service, and then referring their friends and family. And we have that happen a lot, and we wanted to put into place a formal program where people, when they refer someone to us, that not only do we reward the person they're referring, but then we reward the referrer as well as our way of saying thank you.
Now, how does that work?
Well, basically, people who have booked a cruise with us then have the ability to generate coupons good for onboard credits for their friends. So they can go up to their friend and say, here, if you go book a cruise at SureCruise.com, did a good job for me, you know, you'll get an onboard credit on your cruise. Then after that person's sales, the referred person, then the person who gave them the coupon earns an onboard credit to use in a future cruise of their own. So, you know, it's our way of saying thank you to our loyal customers.
A great idea. And what do they get? Do they get a coupon to present, or how does that work?
Well, basically, the coupon is just a way of, so they have something, you know, in print, in writing they can have that explains it. But they do, when they book their cruises with us, we just go ahead and add onboard credit to their booking that they'll be able to spend onboard on, you know, whatever they like, whether it's a bottle of wine or a shore excursion or a spa treatment. They can do whatever they want with it.
That's terrific. A great
idea.
Great.
Yeah, we call it Share the Wealth. And people who are interested, they can go to SureCruise.com. There's a link to it right from our homepage.
Good news. Good news, Evan. You're always on top of it. That's what we like about you.
Well, we'll see about that.
Yeah, we've got to keep on top and see how it does work, actually.
That's right.
There's quite a number of things happening, as we mentioned earlier. But you know what? I didn't see the Rosie O'Donnell thing. Tell me about that.
Well, it's a little bit of a tempest in a teapot. You know how anything that happens involving Rosie O'Donnell instantly becomes newsworthy, right? Well, what Rosie decided to do, she is behind a company called Our Family Vacations. It's a vacation company that caters. It's gay and lesbian friendly, and it's a family business. So the idea is that it's people who have families, gay and lesbian people who have families. They want to go on a vacation that's, you know, very open, you know, to their environment. And their company chartered a Norwegian ship, the Norwegian Dawn, sailing July 7th out of New York. And as a result, of course, once the ship charter was complete with Norwegian, Norwegian then immediately canceled the advance booking as reservations of people who had already booked it. Now, that, you know, this happens all the time when a ship is chartered. You know, no matter how far in advance you charter a ship, there'll always be at least a few people who had already booked it before it was chartered, but now the cruise line has decided to give the whole ship over to one organization. they have to cancel those people's reservations and hopefully do something, you know, give them some kind of accommodation or credit on a future trip to apologize for kicking them off. Now, what made this unusual, first of all, is that it's Rosie's company that made it newsworthy, and second of all, that they were only doing this charter 5 months in advance. Charters are normally done, you know, 9, 10, 11, 12, 24 months in advance, so you don't have that many people booked on the trip already.
Right.
Doing it only 5 months in advance is very unusual and undoubtedly resulted in more people being canceled than would have, and again, made it, you know, more uncomfortable for Norwegian getting some publicity there, although most of it was directed at Rosie. Now, so the people who are, you know, saying, oh, Rosie canceled my cruise, that's not right. You know, if anybody should, if there's any annoyance to be spread around, it would be with that they're dissatisfied with the compensation Norwegian gave them because it was Norwegian's decision to cancel
right.
the cruise.
Right. And the thing, as you say, this must have been a very popular cruise previously before Rosie got involved and chartered it to have that many bookings that far out.
Well, that's right. I mean, well, you know, Norwegian, their New York trips have been growing and growing. They added the Norwegian Spirits, they added another ship, and now other cruise lines have jumped in there. So absolutely, this year-round New York cruising has gotten to be very popular.
Well, you know, as you say, these things happen, and you can blame a lot of things on Rosie, but I guess that's not one of them.
Yeah, I think she gets more or less a free pass on this one, although I'm sure her PR people have put a little note to themselves, let's charter ships farther in advance next time just to avoid this problem altogether.
Now, the other interesting item I find particularly interesting is about Caribbean Cruise Lines is building a two-ship terminal in Roatan. Now, I've spent quite a bit of time in Roatan, and it's quite interesting. The island in itself is that although it's part of Honduras, the people there are English-speaking.
Interesting.
Yeah, and so it's a great spot, and the terminal and the docks are in pretty bad shape. So the mere fact that this is happening is wonderful. The only thing that that concerns me somewhat is that there goes another wonderful little hideaway spot that you know is going to be loaded with cruise people, and that's a good thing for the cruise industry. But when one is looking for a hideaway, it starts to limit the number that are left, and the ones that are left then become very expensive. But I understand that they're going to call it Mahogany Bay, which is a particular area there.
And
tell us more, if you will.
Well, I mean, it'll be they're expected to start building this. And this is Carnival Corporation who's doing this. And, of course, you know, Carnival owns a ton of cruise lines like Holland America, Princess, right. So forth and so on. So we expect all their brands, all their different brands to be using it. Called Mahogany Bay, as you say. It's going to be built starting in later this year and be completed in the summer of 2009. And it'll be on the Roatan waterfront, and it's a two-berth terminal, so they're designing it to accommodate the largest ships that are currently contemplated. You know, so that could be, as you say, up to 7,000 passengers daily who are disgorged into Roatan. So, you know, and they're saying some of the guesses they put out is they expect it to host, 225 cruise ship calls annually. 5 years after it starts. So they're building a welcome center and some fun things there, you know, restaurants, bars, all the kinds of things you'd expect to see in a modern cruise terminal.
Yeah, because there isn't much there now. I mean, it's a lovely little town. It's like a little fishing village. There are a number of waterfront hotels, but not the types that we're used to seeing. They're not high-rises. They're all low-rises, but quite nice. And the town is a very small little town. So it'll be interesting. But the wonderful thing about Roatan is the people are just friendly and fun, and it'll be a great experience for the cruise ship passengers, that's for sure.
Well, it's really the people in the place are what makes the difference between a good port and a bad port in the end, so that's great to hear.
And then also, RCL is canceling their year-round, or they're going to start the year-round sailing from Europe for the first time, that's what it is, okay.
Right, that's exactly right, they're starting to, so... Royal Caribbean made a big announcement that they're putting seven ships into Europe this year, which they made it sound like a big deal, but really isn't, because they already have six ships there, so it
right.
wasn't that exciting. But what I found to be the most interesting part was that they've announced they're going to start doing year-round cruising from Barcelona, which I think is really cool. It's the first time that they put a ship year-round in Europe, and you know, it just shows that all the cruise lines, Royal Caribbean included, are working at, you know, broadening out beyond the, you know, traditional activities they've done, the traditional activity being... spend, you know, the summer in the Mediterranean and the
right.
winter in the Caribbean. So they realize there's an opportunity for year-round cruising. And, in fact, I'm sure what Royal Caribbean was thinking about is that they, you know, they saw that Carnival's Costa brand is growing and growing and growing in Europe. They've had year-round cruising in Europe for a long time because the company's based in Genoa, Italy. And, you know, they didn't want to just cede that year-round European cruise market to the Carnival brands.
Well, I think, you know, and Barcelona is such a great city, so a great choice.
Oh, I absolutely love Barcelona.
Yeah,
it's a wonderful city. Perfect
place. I do
as
well.
And the other news that came out from that is that the third Freedom Class mega ship from Royal Caribbean, this is the one that's, you know, the world's largest ship, there'll be three of them by this point, called Independence of the Seas, will do its inaugural season from Southampton, England, starting in May 2008. So, you know, Royal Caribbean making a commitment to Europe.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just hope that the traditional London overcast and cool weather doesn't dampen the spirits of the people surfing on the surfing machine on board Independence of the Seas.
Well, they might have to wait till they get to the next port.
Hopefully they'll have some occasional sunny skies, yes.
Now, Silver Seas has placed an order for a 36,000-ton ship.
Yep, this will be their largest ship, 540 passengers. It's being built by the Italian shipbuilder Fincantieri, and this was just announced at the Sea Trade Show. And this is the first newly built ship since 1998, when Silver Shadow and Silver Whisper were signed for construction by Silver Sea. So this will be a 40% increase in Silver Sea's overall capacity, up to a total for the fleet of about 1,900 passenger berths. So,
right.
You know, 540 passengers, it's still a relatively small ship, and that's what Silver Sea is known for, is relatively small ship, ultra-luxury cruising, which is exactly what it is. Very high class, very white-glove service, very exclusive, and with a price to match. And fans would say that it's well worth it.
Now, Disney's adding two new ships as well.
Yes, we got new ships coming out of the woodwork here, Roy. Out of the woodwork,
this
I tell you.
This is amazing, actually.
Well, Disney Cruise Line, it's funny. They, I mean, you know, they're renowned. The two ships they have now, they always sail full. They always sail at a premium price for people who really want that Disney experience. And, you know, it's for a number of years it's been clear that Disney could add more ships. Now they finally announced that they're doing it. So they're building these two new ships for delivery in 2011 and 2012, which are both larger than their existing ships, so this will more than double their current capacity. So, you know, everybody out there wearing mouse ears, here's more Disney capacity for you. And, you know, we can expect that perhaps they'll be able to maintain their high price point. Perhaps the more than doubling of capacity will make their cruises a little bit more affordable. Who knows? We'll
see. Yeah, that's an interesting point. You know, you're beginning to wonder where they're going to park all these ships at some point, you know?
Yeah, they're holding back on a lot of those details on what they're planning on doing. Now, you know, Disney did start experimenting with bringing a ship to the West Coast a few years ago, so I wouldn't be surprised at all to see at least one, if not two, of their ships on the West Coast. We'll see.
Yeah, that would be interesting because you're right. They're mostly out of Orlando area now.
That's right. Mm-hmm, that's exactly correct.
And of course, the original Disneyland is on the West Coast. So.
It's in California. That's right. Well, you know, have they come a long way or what? I mean, the original cruises that were done with Disney were done by now bankrupt Premier Cruise Lines on their ship, the Big Red Boat. That was the first time Disney experimented with combining a land and sea vacation by partnering with an existing cruise line. And, of course, when Disney decided that it went so well, they were going to take that business away from Premier and build their own ships instead. That was one of the things, I think, that, you know, in the end resulted in Premier not being able to sustain itself.
Tell us about the senior citizen, a cruise tourist that killed a mugger in Costa Rica.
That's exactly right. That is what happened. I mean, isn't it incredible when you everybody always enjoys hearing stories about a robber who tries to pull off some bad act and
right.
then ends up getting theirs? Well, this guy certainly got his. This was in late February. A group of 12 senior citizens who had been on board Carnival Liberty and docked in Limon, Costa Rica, decided to arrange their own tour separate from the cruise line. So the 12 of them rented a bus and were touring around Limon. And apparently their bus accidentally ended up in a bad area of town. And three robbers walked up to this group of 12 senior citizens, and one of those three robbers pulled a gun. Well, one of these senior citizens is a Marine, you know, once a Marine, always a Marine.
Right.
And put the gun-wielding robber in a headlock, and depending on whose reports you believe, either, you know, accidentally suffocated him to death or snapped his neck, one or the other. And the two other robbers, wisely, ran away.
Well, you know, I was going to say that I'll bet they were ex-Marines, these guys, or something like that.
Oh, yes, that's right. Well, the one senior citizen who put up the defense was indeed an ex-Marine. And And then they took, so they didn't know what to do. They wanted to do the right thing, so they actually took this robber who had just died and put him on their tour bus and brought him to the police station.
Well, you know, the thing is, what's that old, that country western song? I'm getting older, and I'm not as good as I once was, but I'm good once as I ever was. You know?
Well, you know, I mean, that's, wow. That's all I had to say when I read that story was wow.
Yeah, that exactly. And just to close, there's two more items. One, that the Windstar Oceana was sold.
Well, yeah, both Windstar Cruises and Oceana Cruises were sold. The sale is pending. Carnival Corp is divesting itself of Windstar. Carnival Corp is saying that it doesn't want to be in a niche cruise business so much anymore. Windstar is a wonderful but niche cruise line.
Right.
It's being sold to a company called Ambassadors International that runs the Majestic America River Cruise Company. And they're saying, of course, they want to keep it exactly as it is, you know, perhaps improve it somewhat, but the whole Windstar ambiance should remain the same, according to them. It's a it was a $100 million deal, and, you know, but my thought was, my God, $100 million, I could have rounded up some investment and bought Windstar. So I had no idea such a low price tag
on it. Yeah, we could have chipped in. I'd have chipped in.
Well, I would have called you first. Okay, then the second one is Oceana Cruises.
Right.
A majority investment was made by an investment company named Apollo Management that buys lots of stuff. So Apollo Management owns a hotel chain, ski resort, satellite radio company, and they decided to add a cruise line, apparently. They came along and purchased Oceana Cruises with an $850 million majority investment. So the management at Oceana is expected to remain the same. The chairman, one of the founders, Frank Del Rio, is expecting to stay. And, in fact, Oceana at the SeaTrade conference didn't give any details, but they announced that one of the things they're doing with their new investment is making a $1 billion multi-ship new vessel order. So this will be the first time that Oceana is buying a new ship as opposed to having bought the ships that came out of Renaissance Cruises when it went bankrupt. So, again, there are no details given about this new ship order, when or how many or what the ships will be like. But, you know, we can see they're doing good things with this money they've just made with this investment from Apollo Management.
Well, great news, Evan, and thanks for the update. It's great talking to you, and we look forward to talking to you next week.
You're very welcome.
Hope bye for now.
The show's great, Roy. Bye-bye.
Thanks, bye.
USA 3000 Airlines knows the way. USA 3000 now flies to and from Fort Myers, St. Petersburg, Clearwater, and Fort Lauderdale, Hollywood, servicing 11 different cities, all at our same low fares starting at $59. No peanuts served here. For a low fare with a real meal and in-flight entertainment, choose USA 3000. USA 3000 has simple fare rules regardless of the fare. There are no Saturday night stays and no round trip required on any fare. They have a low change fee, and this is the part you're really going to love. Even if you miss your flight, you don't lose your fare. So what are you waiting for? With fares this low and rules this simple, you can afford to take someone with you. Call now to make your reservations at 1-877-USA-3000. That's 1-877-USA-3000. You can also book online at www.usa3000.com or call your local travel agent.
We're back, and as I said, we're joined by Neela Schwartzberg. Neela, you're going to take us to a very interesting place in Georgia. Well, tell us a little bit about it.
Well, the town of Dahlonega, Georgia, it's just charming. It's about an hour and a half outside of Atlanta, so it's easy to get to, and it's 150 years back in time in some ways. It was one of the Gold Rush towns, the first Gold Rush back to 1829.
Even before California, I guess, huh?
Yeah, this was the original Gold Rush town, the first Gold Rush.
Right.
Which people tend not to know about.
Very interesting. And so really what's happened is that the gold, the solid gold, in a sense, has turned to liquid gold.
It's now wine country.
Yeah. Big-time wine country.
Yeah. It's called the Dahlonega Plateau, and apparently the growing conditions are really excellent there, and the wineries are popping up, and it's beautiful to drive through. Delicious to drive through.
Well, I love going on those wine-tasting tours. Now, how many, just off the top of your head, approximately how many wineries do they have there?
There's about four or five right in the Dahlonega area, and others are coming, plus there are a couple more that are outside of the area but still easily accessible.
Now, one of the most popular ones, as you mentioned, I think, in your article is, well, just by name, is the Three Sisters Winery. Tell us a little bit about that, an unusual name to begin with.
Yes, because there are no sisters involved at all, and so everybody's going, why the name? It's named after the mountain. There's a mountain in the area called the Three Sisters.
That's right, so, that's right.
Yeah, that's what the winery is actually named after, but it's owned by Sharon and Doug Paul, and they just have a lovely winery and delicious wines, and they're charming and delightful people to talk to.
Now, for those that are listening, we might first of all mention that you can see that that Neela has up on her site, and if you go to offbeattravel.com, you can read her article in depth and follow the photos as well, because there's some really good stuff up there. But what I was getting to is that we might want to graphically, now this is in the Appalachian area, is that correct?
Yes, it's the Fitz Hills.
Blue Ridge Mountain, yeah.
Yes, in fact the Appalachian Trail starts right outside of town.
So this is really pretty country.
It's beautiful. The mountains in the background and the vineyards and the trees. It's just lovely. And the Dahlonega Plateau itself has good drainage and shelters the vines from extreme weather that, you know, could be moving in. And the altitude means the temperatures cool down in the evening, so it isn't that relentless heat and humidity that you can sometimes get in the south.
And one of the other wineries that you mentioned also is the Frogtown Winery.
Yes, that's another interesting winery. It's a, the building itself is astounding. It was built without nails, and that in itself makes it really unusual. But it is a winery first and foremost, and they grow 17 different varieties of grapes. So there's a lot of different grapes being grown there, and the you can get a tasting there, and they have wine tasters, brunches, and other things that you can do. So it's a very cool place to visit. As is Blackstock and Wolf Mountain. Those are two other vineyards directly in the area.
Now, did you find that different wines, different wineries are producing different types of wine, from table wines to sweet wines to Merlots and, you know, the usuals?
Well, most of them grow close to the standard grapes, but the Three Sisters has a line that they call the Southern Style Wines, which they describe as sweet and fruity, and they certainly are. Frogtown has wines that are a little drier. They're described as wines that cleanse the palate, and they don't add sugar at all during fermentation. Sometimes wineries will do that to increase the alcohol level or, you know, adjust levels, but Frogtown doesn't. The owner is quite adamant about how he doesn't add during fermentation. That's a whole other really fascinating issue that probably not something we want to get into, but the whole question of whether to add sugar during fermentation, is it acceptable, is it not acceptable? And Blackstock Vineyards are one of the first in the area, and he, and when I say he, the owner, David Harris, he actually sells some of his grapes to other wineries, and he just started the winery part. He had been growing the grapes for years. He's one of the first in the area. And then Wolf Mountain, they do only blends. In other words, you don't get a straight Cabernet.
Right.
There you get a blend of the different reds or whites that they're using at the time. But they have lovely, lovely wines. So there's always something interesting.
So as I understand it, that basically these wineries are pretty much in the same location, not too far from one another. It was just that they've most of them have selected different grapes to experiment with, which is the basis for their wines from each particular winery, and of course with the mixed blends from some of the grapes that are being grown there locally as well.
Yes, they are very close together, and they have put their own unique stamp on the vineyard and the winery, which makes it really interesting.
Now, I guess the weather is basically the same, which is very conducive to wines, and it's just that they've just selected different grapes. I would guess from different areas. Did they bring some of this in from other parts of the world, like France, or how did they get started, I wonder?
Well, most of the grapes that they grow are the standard ones that we're used to seeing, but they also, some of the vineyards also grow the grape called Norton, sometimes called Norton Cynthiana, when they want to give it a fancier name. And that is a grape that's indigenous to this country, and it's very hardy.
Right.
So they use that sometimes in blends. You don't often get a bottle of Norton, but it shows up in some of the blends that they create.
I can remember as a kid in certain areas, even out in Long Island, for example, where you used to live at one time, and for a long time.
Yes, I moved here to Albuquerque.
Right, we've seen all those purple grapes growing in people's yards. They had their own little personal vineyards. That some of the Italian friends of mine, and they would make their own, wines in the basement, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess that's the hardy grapes, or those are the darker ones, and of course those are the lighter ones. Let's talk about the Appalachian Mountains, if you will.
Sure.
Obviously, this is the foothill of the Appalachians, the Blue Ridge Mountains, let's talk about the general feeling, the scenery.
It's lovely. It's not that far out of town, so you can have the pleasures of Dahlonega. And there are real pleasures in Dahlonega. And then you can get in your car and drive to the Chattahoochee National Forest and enjoy the pleasures of the mountains and the streams and the lakes and the woods and the hiking. It's just lovely.
And you talk about the Crimson Moon and doing some panning for gold, in fact.
Oh, yeah. There's so much that one can do in Dahlonega. Now, the Crimson Moon was one of my favorite places to listen to music. It's a real music venue. And they have just delightful groups that they book, and I recommend it highly. And the other really fun thing to do in the evening is the Holly Theater. And that's a real community theater, and they put on excellent, excellent plays. Although it's all volunteer and although it's community, they are totally professional. So that was wonderful. And there's a whole range of lodging accommodations. There's luxurious resorts, and there's cute little B&Bs, and I stayed in one called the Top of the Square that was literally a two-room B&B. I had a two-room suite, and then there was just one other bedroom, and it was just charming. So there's all different kinds, and they have the chains down the road, but if you want to stay in a resort or a B&B or charming little places, they have them in the area, so it's great.
Well, now, you did go panning for gold. Tell us.
I did, and I even brought home my five little, tiny little wells.
Uh-huh.
Because there is gold in them there hills.
That's what they say.
Yeah. So I went to the Crissen Gold Mine, and I panned for gold there, and that's where I got my little flex. And it's fun. I really got into it, and I did it. I got two pans of gold, and they have somebody there who helps you, because what do we know from panning for gold? It's a real skill.
I have a funny little story. When I was living down in the Dominican Republic, we had a tour that went up into the mountains, into the waterfalls and rivers, and there was one particular area where we would see these flush of gold, and the pitch I would give people before taking them up there was that, they could very well pay for their trip with the gold that they might find in the river. Anyhow, so we get out there, and this particular story was a German doctor, and he had one of these little paper cups that the Latins drink their coffee, their strong coffee, the Cuban coffee type cups. Anyway, he had this tweezers, as you mentioned in the article, and he was getting all these flecks. And it was amazing because he had this thing almost half full, and of course he was stepping from rock to rock to get to all of these little spots. And And he meticulously got the all of this little flecks of gold. And as he was coming back, somebody bumped into him, and the thing went over into the water. And the poor man was really upset.
Oh, my God, I bet he was.
Yeah, anyway, I think it's
next
over.
Next time he's going to use something with a screw top.
Yeah, but I think they really call that fool's gold. I don't think it's real solid gold. But
Well, the stuff you get at the gold mine when you pan really is gold. I mean, there's fool's gold there, too, but they have somebody, a staff member, who'll help you, and they're very terrific. And it was a lot of fun. And then you can also go panning for gold at the Consolidated Mine down the road. But they also do a tour of the underground gold mine, and it's fascinating. It's just a wonderful, wonderful tour. But what's really kind of cool is because the gold is throughout the hills and the mud and the dirt, you can actually see flecks of gold in the bricks in the Dahlonega Gold Museum, the bricks that were used to make up, it was the courthouse, and now it's the Gold Museum. But they have an area where you can see the original bricks and a light set up, and you can see the tiny little flecks of gold in the brick itself and the mortar between it, and it's fascinating. It's
this is cool. In the Gold Museum you're referring to?
Yes, yeah, the Dahlonega Gold Museum. It's in the middle of the town square.
Now, tell us a little bit, in this panning for gold, give us an idea of the process, and that the gold is heavier than rock. Is that the way it works?
Heavier than water. The way
heavier than water,
is,
yeah.
Yeah, you go in and you get, you can, different ways of getting the pan full of stuff. You can buy high-grade dirt or general dirt. But anyway, we got in and we got a regular pan full of regular dirt. And you stand at a long trough of water and you get the water in the pan and you swish it around and you let the dirt come out and then you put more water in and you swish it around. You do this for a while until there's not that much left at the bottom of your pan. And then what I did is I went, "Hello, can somebody help me find the gold here?" And one of the helpful staff members would come over and kind of help me finish. And then at the very bottom of the pan, there were these tiny little glittery flecks of gold. And one of the men who was panning next to me gave me his tweezers so I could easily get the little flecks out. And I'm standing there with my little jar of water, tiny little jar of water, and you drop this little fleck of gold that you think would float because it's so small, and it just goes to the bottom. And that's the essence of panning for gold. The gold is heavier than water, no matter how small the little speck is. And so it sinks to the bottom. And when you swish the water in the pan, the dirt goes out and the gold stays. But it's a real art.
Sounds like fun to me. We're just about out of time, but if somebody wants to go there, one of our listeners or many of our listeners would like to travel to this area, give us possibly a website resource and just a general idea of what they would do.
Well, the tourism board runs Dahlonega.org, and let me spell that spell for you. That's www.dahlonega, dahlonega.org, and there's of course a link for my Dahlonega article, but they can go directly to their website and learn all about Dahlonega and why it's a wonderful place to come and visit.
Well, thank you, Neela Schwartzberg, and you can go to her website, which is offbeattravel.com, and there's a couple other websites that link to it as well, like Offbeat New York and Offbeat New Mexico, I understand.
Yes, I've just become quite the little website star. But everywhere I go, I fall in love with where I live, and so I start a website.
Neela, thank you very much.
You are very welcome, Ryan.
It's always a pleasure.
Yes.
This is the story of Bob and Elaine. The daily grind was driving them insane.
We need to get away. A change of a location. Not just a trip, but an exciting vacation.
You're right. Pack your bags. The ride's nice and short. We'll fly Sky Value from Gary Chicago Airport.
Fly Sky Value nonstop from Gary Chicago Airport to your favorite hotspots, Orlando, St. Pete Clearwater, Tampa, Mesa, Phoenix, and Las Vegas. Book your flight at flyskyvalue.com.
Gary Chicago Airport is quick as can be. The drive was easy.
The parking secure and free.
Flying Sky Value is the way to go.
For hassle-free flights that save lots of dough.
And they flew Sky Value from Gary Chicago Airport happily ever after.
Fares are one-way subject to availability and change. Restrictions apply. Fares do not include September 11th security fees and other U.S. taxes and fees. See participant agreement for details. Sky Value flights operated by Extra Airways, PC number 06154.
Well, we're back, and in this segment, we're going to revisit our Rediscovering America series, and travel journalist Kay Harwell Fernandez is with us again this week, and she's going to take us on a mental journey to Central Florida's Polk County. Welcome, Kay.
Good morning. It's always a pleasure.
It's always a pleasure to speak with you. A lovely article, and it's especially interesting because I live in Sarasota, and sometimes, you know, we don't get to revisit some of these places, and we really need to do it. And it was kind of exciting to go through your article, and you as you start off, you're talking about Central Florida's Polk County, elegant, classic, and timeless. Terrific.
Thank you. The area definitely takes you back to yesteryear. Lakeland is the largest town in Polk County, and it reminds me of old Florida. It has a very nice small town feel. There are no high rises, and there's no wall-to-wall traffic. So it definitely harkens back to yesteryear.
And you mentioned that the largest town in Polk County is Lakeland, and it's only 30 to 45 minutes from Orlando, in fact.
Yes, and if people are visiting the Orlando area, the theme parks, it's just a very quick hop over to Lakeland and the other communities in Polk County.
And you say in your article it reminds you of old Florida.
Absolutely, it does. I've been in Florida many decades, and sometimes the high rises have taken over, so it's always nice to see something to the contrary.
Exactly. Now, you say Lake Mira anchors the downtown area of Lakeland. Take us through that, because that's a lovely area.
It is indeed. Lakeland, of course, has just many, many lakes. In fact, in Polk County, there are over 500 lakes. Lake Mira is a lovely lake that anchors downtown. It has an Italian feel to it, and there's a grand staircase that connects Lake Mira Park to Hollis Gardens. And the these gardens have a neoclassic design, very similar to gardens that you would see in Florence, Italy, and you definitely see that Italian influence throughout. And it contains some 10,000 flowers and ornamental shrubs. It's just a lovely garden. Of course, they have replantings throughout the year. And what is remarkable is that the horticulturists have made sure that all the shrubs and plants are indigenous to Florida, or pretty much native to Florida. And it's a remarkable history that in horticultural itself in Florida.
And you say that Lakeland remains a walkable city.
It's very walkable. There's shops, antique shops, historic buildings. City Hall was built in the 1920s. It's a lovely building to walk by. Also in the downtown area is historic Polk Theater that was dedicated back in 1928, and it served as a movie palace and a vaudeville theater right way back when.
And it was recreated by an Italian architect, was it? Or
yes, an Italian architect, and again, there's a very strong Italian influence here. He designed it to look like a Mediterranean village inside the theater,
right,
which in itself is quite a feat. And you have Italian walls with sconces and faux balconies and faux windows. And for people sitting in the audience, you know, he has it designed where your eye just goes to the stage.
And so they, as you say in your article, they restored all this. Even an old 1927 pipe organ was rescued.
Yes, and you know how they used to play the pipe organs back in the vaudeville days and
sure
even
do.
During the early days of movies. And so the pipe organ's there. And the Polk today is a viable performing arts center, and it's worth a visit just to see the design work inside.
And then you have the Polk Museum of Art, as you mentioned.
Yes, and it was another surprise. It has some wonderful permanent collections of pre-Columbian artifacts and 7 galleries and an outdoor sculpture garden. You'll see a large American and European collection of 20th century and contemporary art, Japanese prints, ceramics, African-American art. It runs the gamut. Plus, they do have rotating exhibits throughout the year.
And this, as you say, it marks the 7th annual Florida Outdoor Sculpture Competition, which I was not aware of, and I think that should be very interesting. That's spread out between, what, Lakeland and Winter Haven?
Yes, indeed. And it's a joint project of the Polk Museum of Art and those cities of Lakeland and Winter Haven. Last year they had a kaleidoscope of butterflies throughout the towns that were just outstanding. And just recently, 20 new sculptures came on display. And they'll be on display through February of next year when a new competition begins. And these are just very creative and innovative designs.
Now, let's talk about the legacy of Frank Lloyd Wright, because I'm not too. I wonder how many people are really aware of his influence on that area. And
he had a tremendous influence. Lakeland's Florida Southern College is a liberal arts college. And Frank Lloyd Wright designed 18 of the buildings, but 12 of those were built. And the first three structures were constructed with student labor, of all things.
How about that?
The chapel is the tallest, and the others are low because they want to allow a view of Lake Hollingsworth, another beautiful lake that's in Lakeland. The covered walkways are called esplanades, and they connect all but one of Frank Lloyd Wright's buildings. And he was just a master in controlling space and light. And they're just lovely structures. And the entire architecture collection received a National Register of Historic Places designation in the mid-1970s.
And then from there, you went on over to the Florida Air Museum, did you not?
Yes, it's just outside of Lakeland. It's very convenient and accessible. And the Florida Air and Museum is at Sun and Fun, which I found out is Florida's official aviation museum.
Yeah, I thought that was quite interesting.
I think most people don't realize that, including me.
And me.
but it was established more than 20 years ago, so I'm delighted that I can get this out to the readers and to the listeners here that the museum does exist. There are 35 aircraft. There are thousands of historic artifacts that pay homage to 100 years of flight. And one of the most interesting collections is that of Howard Hughes. And they just have hundreds and hundreds of items, including models of his famous spruce goose, his personal flight suits, medals, just all sorts of memorabilia that's never been seen before.
Interesting. I need to get over and see that.
It's fascinating.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I'm just going to follow your whole article and get in the car after the show and head on over.
You'd have a good time, I know.
Right. Now, you say you're not a flying ace, but you did get over to Fantasy of Flight.
Right. I think people who are, you know, not even aviation buffs will still enjoy both the Florida Air Museum and then Fantasy of Flight. Fantasy and Flight, Flight is in Polk City, which is basically about 20 minutes outside of Disney World, so it's very close. And this is actually an aviation attraction, and it has 40 rare and vintage airplanes that have actually been restored to flyable condition.
And, of course, it's easy to spot because driving along I-4, they have that DC-3 on its nose right along.
Right.
The first time I went by there, I looked at that and I thought, good Lord, look at that. The plane's crashed here.
It makes you do a double take.
It sure does. I'm amazed, actually, that they allow it, because I wonder how many, you know, kind of fender benders they have in that area when you drive by. You can't help but do a double take.
That's right.
But as you mentioned in the article, it was started by Kerman Weeks, who is quite well known in the industry and is an aerobatics competitor and aircraft designer. But you say you can actually take a ride in a biplane. Is that correct?
Yes, you can. I did not. I'm not a great flyer, but you can go in a 1942 Boeing Stearman PT-17 or a 1929 New Standard D-25. And
of course, everybody knows what that is, right?
These are just, it's remarkable that these are in flyable condition, and it's just a lot of fun. People really enjoy it.
And then for those that, as you say, prefer a little less zoom, they can take a hot air balloon ride, is that
right? Right, they do offer hot air balloon rides, and you can just look down over Central Florida for a couple hours.
And then you go to probably one of the most well-known landmarks in this area, and of course, that's Cypress Gardens.
Yes, Cypress Gardens is actually the oldest theme attraction in Florida. It was it opened back in 1936 by Dick Pope. And I'm sure a lot of folks are familiar with Cypress Gardens. It has beautiful botanic gardens and grounds. They have the world-renowned water ski shows and leisurely boat rides through the Cypress and those famous Southern Belles.
Well, you know, I think it's probably Cypress Gardens that made water skiing popular. I mean, I can remember as a kid, just that's all I the first time I ever saw anybody water ski. Well, of course, I grew up in New York City, so we didn't do too much there. But and that's all I can remember is these lovely gals on the water skis, and that, of course, that's never left my memory. And it did. It went back as far as 1936, you say.
Cypress Gardens did,
yeah.
And it's also considered the birthplace of performance water skiing.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Back in 1943, Julie Pope, wife of founder Dick Pope, organized a water ski show for the visiting servicemen, you know, during World War II.
Right.
And she used her son and daughter and their friends as performers, and that's how the water ski shows started there at Cypress Gardens.
That's really interesting. And, you know, you mentioned in the article that after 9/11, the attendance was low. But I believe that when the new owners had taken it over, it also got hit by that big hurricane, which kind of destroyed everything they had started there.
Yes, unfortunately,
yeah,
that is the case.
But the
park closed briefly and then opened up a couple of years later in 2005.
Yeah.
And they now have additional attractions and rides for children.
All right. I need to get over there. I've been meaning to do that, to see what it looks like and maybe do some interviews live from there, because it is a great historic site, and Florida is just well known. They probably promoted Florida better than any other attraction before Disney.
Absolutely, they did. And people, you know, just, they did enjoy the park very much so, and you can still enjoy it. It still has those Southern Belles and the water ski shows and the beautiful topiaries that the horticulturists right. spend hours.
And we know about those Southern Belles. They're so lovely.
Yes.
Now, you went on. Let's go over to Lake Wales, where you headed next, I believe.
Lake Wales, also, of course, in Polk County, is a charming small town. There are two streets are the historic district. It's very nice to stroll down the streets and to shop and browse and stop for a bite to eat. It's just a very pleasant area. And on the outskirts of Lake Wales, the Lake Wales Art Center is definitely worth a stop. The building itself dates from 1927, and it's an architectural treasure just in itself. it is similar to the mission style that people might be familiar with,
right,
that you'd see in New Mexico or Texas.
Yes.
And it wasn't originally a Catholic church.
And, again, it's home to the best, probably the best known historic site, and which is the Bach Sanctuary. Everybody seems to know pretty much. When you mention Lake Wales, that seems to come in mind. So
absolutely,
tell us about that, because the history behind that is quite amazing.
Actually, when I was a kid, it was always called the Singing Tower.
That's exactly right.
Tower.
That's how I knew it, right?
But they have segued into Historic Bach Sanctuary as their official name, and of course, it's on the National Register of Historic Places as well. Pulitzer Prize-winning author and philanthropist Edward Bach created a bird sanctuary and gardens, and he donated these to the American people. And it was dedicated in 1929.
And by President Calvin Coolidge, which
right.
is really amazing.
Absolutely. It's a beautiful spot. It has one of the world's greatest carillons. It has, the tower is 205 feet. It's Gothic and Art Deco, made out of marble and coquina stone. And then the 60 bell carillon plays concerts twice daily and during special events.
And you mentioned that Polk County was named for James Polk, the 11th president of the U.S.
Yes.
I wonder how many people know that.
It's a surprise as well.
Yeah, talk about trivia. Oh, my goodness. Now, for those that are going there, would like to revisit or for the first time visit Polk County, there are a couple of things you can do. One, you can go to our site at ttrn.com and bring up Kay's article. And there are also a couple of links there. And one is, I've always thought that the Visitors and Convention Bureau, the Sensational, was always a kind of a nice name. Sensational.org, I believe, is the website. As you
Yes, it is.
So it'd be
and it's a very good site to visit for more information and for vacation packages also, if people are interested.
Kate, a super article. Thank you very much for sharing that with us. And we always look forward to chatting with you. And I will say bye for now.
Thank you so much.
Right, bye.
Okay, bye.
Well, Kay Fernandez, and always a pleasure. A great article. Please go to our website, and you can read it in depth. And I've printed it out, and I'm going to put it in my car, and I'm just going to follow it to the letter. We're going to go to break. When we come back, Bob Fisher, who is on assignment in France, is going to bring us an interview from there, and he's going to chat with Alan and Karen Higgins. So stay with us, and we'll be right back.
This is the story of Bob and Elaine. The daily grind was driving them insane.
We need to get away. A change of a location. Not just a trip, but an exciting vacation.
You're right. Pack your bags. The ride's nice and short. We'll fly Sky Value from Gary Chicago Airport.
Fly Sky Value nonstop from Gary Chicago Airport to your favorite hotspots. Orlando, St. Pete, Clearwater, Tampa, Mesa, Phoenix, and Las Vegas. Book your flight at flyskyvalue.com.
Gary Chicago Airport is quick as can be. The drive was easy.
The parking secure and free.
Flying Sky Value is the way to go.
For hassle-free flights that save lots of dough.
And they flew Sky Value from Gary Chicago Airport happily ever after.
Fares are one-way, subject to availability and change. Restrictions apply. Fares do not include September 11th security fees and other U.S. taxes and fees. See participant agreement for details. Sky Value flights operated by Extra Airways, PC number 06154.
The company is called Simply Perigal. And as the name implies, it's simply wonderful. It is a discovery that I have made of one of the best travel suppliers I think I've ever encountered. And this one is in a region of France called Perigord, also known by some people as the Dordogne. And it's in the historic area of Aquitaine, as in Eleanor of. and it's in the southwest of France. And I'm talking to the owners and proprietors and personal service people, Karen and Alan Higgins, who run Simply Perigold, which is a personal services vacation rental business. And it's a very professional business, let me tell you. And Karen, I wonder if you could talk to me first. Give our listeners some contextual information. Where are we and where is Simply Perigold?
Okay, I think, first of all, we're in the southwest of France. I think from our own perspective, because we come from the UK, we personally know where the Dordogne, or Périgord, as the old name for the Dordogne is. But I think sometimes we do get a bit frustrated that people coming from afar only know the big cities, so Paris, Provence, Côte d'Azur, and the other, in my opinion, more beautiful parts of France seem to get left behind in terms of journalistic coverage.
But also, you're using the term Périgord as well, because it's the historic term. It is, in every way, it's old France as well as contemporary France. This is a very contemporary vacation area. A lot of people come here. Why do they come here?
It's a very difficult question to answer in that there are so many answers. So we have people coming from all over the world, whether it's because they want to discover the history, the food, the gastronomy, the wine, the wildlife. They want to get back to their roots, feel in touch with nature. And there's a whole host of reasons. And we have people, as I said, coming from all over the world, but all ages.
Right, so we have a destination here that very much fulfills what we now know in the travel market as the new need, which is the authentic experience, the return to the village. The Dordogne is all about the village, and I have, I've said this many times to our listeners, but I have two expressions that I particularly like. One is, the only real change occurs in the village, and the other is, it takes a village to raise a child. But it also takes a village to entertain people from outside the culture. Alan, I want you to just begin to tell me a little bit about the story of Simply Perigord itself. How did this all happen? You're English. What are you doing in France?
Okay, Simply Perigord was created 17 years ago by our former partners. And it got to the point where it became very successful and grew as more and more people wanted to come to the Perigord and rent houses. They were in a position where they needed some more people to come on board, and we, at the time, working and travelling every day into London, had decided there may be something better in life than that sort of daily grind. So we came on board 10 years ago now, and we've been here ever since, and remark almost daily that we would never go back. It is such a different experience here. A lot of English people would add that it's like going back 50, 60 years ago as to how life used to be in England. And I have to say, that's absolutely true. There's plenty of big cities. They're a reasonable distance away. We have Perigord, we have Bergerac at 45 minutes away. We have Bordeaux at an hour and a half away. But where we are, it's just full of quaint countryside, of rivers and chateaus and villages, and the whole thing just moves at a pace of life which is out of keeping with the modern world, and that's absolutely the reason we want to be here, and that's absolutely the reason most of our clients want to be here.
But you've also brought with you a lot of experience that is very important to the business you're running here. You both had brilliant careers in the financial industry in Britain and all over the world. You're world travelers yourself. Alan, what do you think are some of the transferable skills that you brought with you here to Simply Perigold?
I think the most basic and overriding issue is that, having worked in the financial world and come across many, many companies in all sorts of industries, there's one overriding thing which is important to any successful company, and that's service of clients. And that's absolutely what we're about here at Simply Perigord. We know people have travelled thousands of miles to get here. From time to time, little problems crop up, and we're here to see that, that those problems can be resolved as quickly as possible, whether it be a desire for a train ticket that somebody who doesn't speak the language can't manage, whether it be a lost luggage at Paris Charles de Gaulle Airport, or whether it just be a small electrical problem in a house. But service is absolutely our premier goal.
And I'll just throw in an editorial comment there because it's really important. We know that the top priority now in the travel industry all around the world, especially in North America, by the way, is the personalization of the travel experience. People have become quite fed up with the anonymous mass marketing of travel. But they've also, as we all have, as consumers, whether we're buying cars or houses or clothing or whatever, we have discovered that we are in control again, and we can tailor our experience to our needs. So the whole personal service, and I've seen you delivering these personal services, and it's quite amazing. I want to now talk about your clients, though, and get a sense of, you know, who would want to come here. I know why I would want to come here, but Karen, just talk to me about, you know, give me an overview of who are the people that really enjoy Simply Périgord.
It's actually fascinating because from across the world, the different countries, different cultures that want to visit, and they want to visit often for different reasons. So in the height of the summer, in August, for example, lots of Parisians will shut up their apartments, drive down to the Dordogne or the Périgord, and stay for 3 weeks. That's become slightly shorter in terms of a holiday period to rent these days, because they have also discovered there's a big wide world outside. So much as they're doing that for themselves, we are now finding that we are finding clients from all over, you know, all over the world wanting to come and visit. So from a North American perspective, for example, they're very interested in the history, the culinary, things that they can find here. And as a result of that, they don't want to come necessarily and rent a house in the high season when it will be quite crowded with tourists and the heat. They'd rather come in the slightly off season, May and June, September and October, for example, absolutely beautiful here. And they'll want to discover that. On the other side of things, you might have a Dutch family who come here by car rather than fly, and they want to relax, sit by a swimming pool, and have a very nice, quiet time. So
now, also in North America, you mentioned North America, and I'll talk about that because, as elsewhere, we have an aging population. And that age, and I'm one of those, we call ourselves baby boomers, or the 50-plus crowd, but we're active, independent people, relatively well-educated. We like the arts. We have a new appreciation of the environment, the outdoors. This is all the Dordogne. This is all Périgord. You mentioned what I call the shoulder seasons, and that's because that is a convenient time for us to come. We can still golf. We can still hike. We can do all these things. So the shoulder season, it has become, in the travel industry, as a matter of fact, almost a high season. Now, Ellen, I want to come back to you, and I want you to give us an overview of the properties that you actually rent. And I think you're also in the sales business as well. But you have quite a very interesting inventory of properties. Give me some examples of the properties that you rent.
Well, the first thing to say is we have in total 70 properties for rent, and we've always felt it's important to have a good range in them because we know there are different tastes out there in the marketplace and there are different budgets out there in the marketplace. So at the bottom end, we have little two-sleeper houses up to chateaus sleeping 10 to 12 people. But one of the themes which runs through all the houses is there will be a certain level of equipment. And I think this is important for people who are on holiday and want to be on holiday. So it isn't a working holiday in any sense. So almost all the houses have got dishwashers. They have washing machines. They have now, in most cases, televisions, but also satellite TV. So if you're coming from North America or you're coming from Australia and you want to see a little bit of CNN and keep up with the news, then you can do so in almost every house we've got.
Okay, and Karen, can you talk to me a little more architecturally, culturally, because some of your properties are absolutely stunning, and I'll come back to this issue of authentic. Talk to me about the authenticity of your properties.
Okay. I mean, we have a good number of properties dating from as early as the 13th century, 14th century. And the thing that's important for me when I decide if I'm going to take a property into the portfolio is a sense of respect in terms of the way that the owner has renovated that property. And what I'm looking for is a combination of retention of the character and the history in what I would call the communal rooms, the dining room, the sitting room, that sort of thing, yet coupled with fully modern kitchens, bathrooms, etc. We do have some modern properties, and to be perfectly honest with you, it's actually quite hard to create character in a modern property. So what we're generally looking for there is something with a stunning view, whereby the owner internally has perhaps nice drapes, nice sofas, but they have tried to create character. And the other reason for taking some modern properties is some people have allergies. Some people can't live with exposed stonework, big fireplaces in stone, beams. So we do feel that we've got something for everybody.
You've got personal service for everybody. You think of everything. People have come on holiday to France for centuries. And they came because of the French culture, which, certainly in my experience, emphasizes quality above all things in all things. And talk to me about some of the, Alan, I'll ask you this, because when you have to take care of these properties, it's a qualitative, not just a quantitative experience. What are some of the quality items that you actually have to maintain and make sure are operating properly?
Well, a fair number of the properties are equipped with heating systems. As well as renting these houses, we also look after a fair number of them all the way through the year. So that would entail visiting them once a month just to make sure. One thing we've not really touched on here, we're in an almost no crime situation. We do get the very odd break in. We perhaps might see one every 2 years, something of that sort of order. But that's what we do in terms of maintaining the property. We'll go and visit them, we'll make sure nothing untoward has happened. Winters can be a little bit variable here. 5-6 years ago, we were down to minus 16, minus 17 degrees. So it's part of our job to see that the houses are drained out. There's no water in any pipes, so there can be no disasters for the owner to come back to when the spring and the warmer weather comes. Also, in terms of maintenance, for a lot of the rental houses, because it means we can give a better service, we actually cut the garden and look after the swimming pool, which again means if there's any sort of problems, we can be out there almost instantly to try and do something about it for people.
So, as you said, the people who visit and rent your properties don't have to do any work. You do it for them. They have a quality of life experience. Let's move on. I'm going to throw in America we call it a curveball at you here, but palm trees grow in the Dordogne. I've seen them. I saw, a banana tree. Karen, what's this climate all about?
An interesting one, too, because as we're seeing climate change throughout the world, olive trees grow here, too. Lemon trees grow here. Hibiscus plants, which in the UK would be just a sort of little spindly bush, grow as sort of quite substantial trees here. And so we are in a microclimate, and that's a well-known fact here. We are also in one of the least polluted areas of the whole of France. And let me tell you, France itself is not a highly polluted area, country. But for sure, we ourselves have found ourselves sitting on our back terrace in January at lunchtime, having our, you know, having our glass of wine or whatever it might be on our day off, I would add. We don't drink during our working week. But the climate can be quite, it's a very wide range of temperatures. It does mean we have seasons, which I think is why it's so popular. You know, you can see the change in the leaves in the autumn. You very rarely see snow, but you do see thick frost.
You also have a lot of migrating birds. I can't believe the number of bird songs that I've heard throughout this area.
I have to tell you that when we go back to the UK, and really that's only once a year now, as Alan says, we would never go back to live. But one thing I miss when I go there is I don't wake up to birdsong. And you're absolutely right. You know, whether it's kites, cranes, herons, woodpeckers, you name it, you know, literally all types of birds. It's fascinating.
And every sport, every activity, where within easy driving distance of Bordeaux, the capital of the area, tremendous art museums, theater, you name it. You provide a full in-depth cultural experience, and this fits in with what I always say, that we travel to explore the diversity of the human experience, and in so doing, we discover the commonality. And here, back to the human village again. And the only real change occurs in that village. And in that village, and I know the French people well because I've traveled here more times than I can count. And French people are friendly, they are receptive, they like tourists. But I think the people of the Périgord are especially receptive. Alan, can you talk to me about some of your relationships with the people of the Périgord?
Well, the basis of our relationship is really a working one in terms of we do restoration projects for people, but the just general running and maintenance of the houses we have on rent requires working with the artisans. And through a period of years now, we have a superb relationship with many of them because what we need them to do for us, as well as being friendly, is to do things quickly, to get problems solved for people very quickly. And so throughout this area, there's a whole bunch of artisans who we work famously with. Beyond that, though, I would sort of say a little bit of effort and just a few words, just a bonjour or an au revoir, goes a long way. And I sort of find that the people here, again, it's a sort of throwback thing. It's almost like the Shire in The Lord of the Rings, but just one or two words and you'll find them coming back and helping you and being very, very friendly.
Okay, so you have a team here, too. I mean, it's not just Karen and Alan Higgins, but you have an office team, and you have a very extended team of artisans, as you said. I want to close on, everyone, of course, is now listening to this, is now really excited, and they're going to go to your website, and we're going to mention that in a moment. So they're all set to come here. How are they going to get here? Well, it's highly one of the most accessible areas of Europe. So talk to me about accessibility. Karen, how do you get here?
Okay, well, obviously, if you live in Europe, you can come by car. If you live in North America, flights, regular flights into Paris would normally be your first stopping point. From Paris, there are three very easy ways to get here. Hire a car, take a train, or take an internal flight to Bordeaux or Toulouse, and then take a car from there. If you take the TGV, the fast train, from the centre of Paris, you can come into Libourne, which is an hour and a half away from us, and hire a car. Similarly, if you take an internal flight to Bordeaux, you can then get a train to Bergerac. And if you come into Bergerac, you can hire a car from there. And we can help with any of this. You know, as I say, if you email us, you will receive a reply from Karen, Alan, or Diana. Diana is our only other English full-time employee. She's lived here for 27 years. And we know all of our houses, which is something I want to emphasise. So if you have a specific request, disability is a good thing. We have plenty of houses which are on one level. But any, if there's something specific that you particularly want or you're worried about, we're only an email away. And obviously you can always pick up the phone as well, because we have plenty of French staff, but they're all bilingual. So you should not worry about contacting us and being put in touch with someone who can't communicate with you.
Simply Perigord, simply terrific. And Karen and Alan Higgins, and I thank you very much for this.
Thank you very much, Bob.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, Bob. That was a very interesting chat. And we're looking forward to your return. Thank you for sharing that with us all. You're listening to Talking Travel on Travel Talk Radio Network, TTRN.com, and the World Travel and Dining Guide, channel, I'm sorry. My guests next week are Evan Eggers, Elandra Warner, and let's see, Karen LaPerry is going to be with us as well. So until then, this is Roy Lowy saying bye for now and happy travels.
You've been listening to Talking Travel with Roy Lowy and friends on the Travel Talk Radio Network. Visit our website at ttrn.com for complete show archives and interviews with guests like Chris Elliott, Peter Greenberg, Bob Fisher, Johnny Jett, and many other great travel professionals. Don't forget to tune in live every Wednesday at 11 a.m. Eastern for more Talking Travel with Roy Lowy and friends.